Hey guys, Frank Vaughn here. It's March 27th, 2026, and you may have guessed already that I was watching Wyatt Claypool last night. Now, if that open primed you for me to roast Wyatt on this stream, for those of you who don't know Wyatt, he's a self-professed neocon, a coverer of Canadian politics. He's very dialed in on Canadian politics from his perspective. I will never roast him on this channel. I believe he's genuine. I think he works hard. And that's enough for me sometimes. The way he covers this is interesting compared to how other influencers have picked it up. CCP propagandist, liberal floor crosser, exposes himself as CCP frontman. Of course, this is Ma, one of the latest MPs that was poached from the Conservative Party of Canada. And while a lot of people will pretend that this is a black eye alone for the Liberal Party, we have to remember that the Conservative Party allowed this guy to get through vetting, allowed this guy into their party, allowed him to run, allowed him to win his riding. And he is part of that soft conservative underbelly that the Liberals are successfully pulling away. Moving to a different influencer. This is Northern Perspective. Breaking: Mark Carney's new MP completely embarrasses Liberal Party and then makes it 10x worse. I think the CPC should be eating some humble pie on this as well. All of these floor crossers, all of these treacherous CCP candidates, they allowed into their party. And people are always asking me, they're saying, you know, why don't you focus on Canada? Well, here's one. Here, I'll focus on Canada. Canadian real estate prices haven't budged in 9 years in real terms. Now, there was that peak back in 2022, the glory days when people still believed that they could just put drywall and lumber into their house and retire on it magically at the end of their life. And it's actually hard to fault people, because the Canadian real estate market, driven as it was by money laundering, driven as it was by high inflation in that, or high immigration and inflation, actually, in that order. Money laundering, immigration, and inflation saw people lock in incredible gains on their homes all throughout the aughties, to the point where it became one of Canada's fundamental economic models. This idea that you're illiquid, high carry cost, piece of fixed real estate could actually be a retirement investment fund. It didn't work out, and now we're finding out. We're in the finding out phase here in Canada. Now, I want to take you back to a time that only Pepperidge Farms remember, because our attention spans are incredibly limited, being destroyed by TikTok shorts and YouTube shorts. We can barely remember what happened a little over a year ago during an election campaign, where we were told the only thing that could possibly deal with Canada's housing problem in terms of affordability was an increase in supply. Here's a headline. This goes all the way back to 21, folks, this story. Not talking about money laundering, not talking about high immigration. Supply is the only cause and solution to Canada's housing woes. It's time to be bold. Now, I'm going to skip ahead for a minute. Bond yield spike drives latest fixed mortgage rate hikes of up to 30 basis points. And here's global news. Why the Iran war is making mortgage renewal feel like a roller coaster. The Bank of Canada has stood pat on rates. They're not raising rates. So people are asking, why are our mortgage rates going up? Because inflation's going to go up. Because bond yields are going to go up. Because demand is cratering and mortgages and real estate is becoming not the guaranteed investment that we used to see it as, but now it's becoming riskier and riskier. The average price of a home in the Greater Toronto Area is now $400,000 below where it was at peak. And that's if you can find a buyer. Now back to thoughts on immigration. It's a shame that the Conservative Party of Canada wasn't smart enough to see ahead and actually campaign on this. Too afraid of losing the election, they didn't take bold positions, and so they lost the election. It's kind of a feedback loop that they've been caught in for over a decade. Headline on screen, Canada's population falls for second consecutive quarter, as the Liberal Party does something that it didn't campaign on. Preliminary estimates show the country's population declined over the entire calendar year, falling by 100,000 in 2025. StatsCan says it should be interpreted with caution because recent immigration policy changes may lead to larger than usual revisions. My argument is it'll be revised to the downside because, as of January 1st, the proportion of non-permanent residents relative to the population was down 6.5%. from 6.8% the previous year, and Canada has also welcomed fewer permanent residents in the fourth quarter, with the number of new immigrants falling nearly 20% to 83,168. I would still argue it's still far too high, but you see, when they take the foot off the gas of immigration, it takes the foot off the gas of the Canadian economy. There's not this flood of new people coming in, some with money, to keep driving real estate north, which has been the primary driver of our economic cycle. The Liberals did not campaign on doing this, on reducing not only temporary foreign workers, but new permanent residents. And they're also floating the idea of canceling permanent residency for some of the people who have already gained it. Because this is how you actually lower housing prices. It's never had anything to do with supply. It had to do with way too many people and too few houses. Supply is one interpretation. But the Liberals campaigned on building 500,000 homes every single year. That has disappeared. It's not going to happen. It was never going to happen. The only way to deal with the problem was to turn the immigration taps down. But they didn't tell you they were going to do that. See, if the conservatives had gotten in front of this, and they had gotten in front of it firmly, they could now say the liberals are implementing their policy and call them out on their lie. But instead, they denied themselves that tactical and strategic win by being too timid. And that's always the conservative party's fatal flaw. Now, I have to move on. As interesting as Canada is, as bad as the legislation coming down, we got draconian speech legislation coming down, we got all kinds of bad news coming down from government, we got a spiraling national debt, we have a ever-increasing deficit, and we have capital flight, which continues ongoing unabated. We have land claims being initiated by the federal government on behalf of natives, giving them, throwing title into disarray. Like, there's all the things we've talked about on this channel before. But there really isn't that much of a difference in messaging when it comes to the Conservative Party of Canada. They're not exactly getting any stronger. I would love to see it. I think Pierre Poilievre needs to fire every single advisor he has and then just do it from his gut. If he did that, things might get interesting again. But moving on, because the most important thing, whether you like it or not, is the unfolding global conflict, which is exactly what it is at this point. I don't really want to call it World War III just yet, but it might as well be. It's only one step up the ladder away from World War III. I suppose the superpowers aren't fighting each other directly at this stage just yet, but the global economy is already showing the signs of stress. Now, I just want to highlight the price of oil today because Trump's words alone, Witkoff's words alone, are no longer enough to tame the markets. They've cried wolf twice, and they have been proven out by actions and by reality. It's been proven that they've been completely full of it, claiming that the Iranians begged, this time around, for a 10-day reprieve on their energy installations while Iran fires ever more missiles. I think there was 14 separate barrages that were fired at Israel yesterday alone. They don't seem to be diminished in their fighting spirit. And when it comes to the impending ground operation, which, look, I know I made a video yesterday saying that it would start this weekend. Maybe it does. Maybe it doesn't. It's irrelevant. Those troops are moving there. They're getting ready to move. Whether it happens this weekend or there's just an escalation in the bombing campaign leading up to the deployment of those troops, I think it's a nightmare no matter what. But the reality is, just to finish up here, the market is no longer just listening to his words. And let's just refresh this screen. Oh, it's bounced a little bit. It's only down 740 points at this hour. It seems like the Dow Jones is starting to figure out this. Iran's war energy impact forces world to pay up and cut consumption. Strait of Hormuz closure hits 20% of global oil, LNG supply. We're also talking about fertilizer. We're also talking about precursor ingredients for your pharmaceuticals. There are people right now who are waiting for drugs that are delayed, that they can't get. And they're not, I don't know if the doctors know, I don't know if the pharmacists know, I don't know if they understand how fragile that supply chain is as well. Maybe a long time before they get those drugs. Remember, I told you weeks ago, you might want to stock up, see if you're on prescription drugs that you can't easily get off, you might want to check into their supply chain and do a little depth research since, you know, your life counts on it. We have, so far, the crisis has removed about 400 million barrels of oil. That's all we're talking about is oil. We're not talking about urea. We're not talking about the fact crops going in the ground and they're not fertilized properly. We're not talking about the impending global famine if this continues. And right now, the Iranians are controlling the strait, period. All the bluster coming out of the Trump administration, all of the hot air doesn't change the reality on the ground. The quote is, you're not going to conserve your way around this. What it's going to translate to is prices high enough that people stop consuming, says Dan Pickering, chief investment officer at Pickering Energy Partners. I wonder if he's related to Ronnie Pickering. If you don't know the meme, maybe look that up. Ronnie Pickering, you'll get the reference. The breadth of what is at risk here, fuels, chemicals, LNG, fertilizer inputs, is what makes this moment qualitatively different from previous episodes of Gulf tension. It's amazing how words, technical words, just normal, innocuous words, can hide behind them or conceal, without even intending to do so, the full length and breadth of the disaster that Trump has put the entire world in. That's just the way it is. Trump has assailed NATO allies over their lack of support for U.S.-Israeli war against Iran, calling the longtime U.S. allies cowards. This was a foreseeable disaster that a pleb in Saskatchewan saw coming a mile away, seen coming for years. And yet, and apparently some of these nations in NATO saw it coming too, and they don't want to get involved, in spite of the fact that Great Britain is going to be out of oil, folks. They're just going to be flat out of energy. The Russians have openly said eventually Europe's going to be begging them for energy, and it's true. The idea of cutting them off, Europe choosing to cut itself off from Russia over the conflict in Ukraine, is one of the greatest self-owns in the history of humanity. Not self-owns, self-owns in the history of humanity. These pictures, should just read you the title, Iran War Pushes Countries into Energy Triage as They Conserve Power and to Curb Soaring Prices. So they're waiting in line to get their fuel so that they can keep going. And like, you can make fun of this all you want. You can look at these filthy conditions and be like, man, these people have got to have gut bacteria that is so healthy to keep them safe and sanitary. But all of the fuel that's being burned, it goes up the chain. And like, these people, billions of them, who are living on the margins already, cannot afford the adjustment. There they are. Motorists wait behind a rope for their turn to get fuel at a pump. And I know it's just brown people in the third world, right? Like, we shouldn't really care about this, but this is a warning for the rest of us. It starts at the bottom and it works its way up. Now, here's another one. Tricycle drivers prepare their documents to receive their cash assistance from the government to help in their livelihood as oil prices, blah, 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 blah. This is in the Philippines. Philippines is already kind of a middle nation. You should probably care about it. There's a lot of Filipino Canadians, but waiting in line to get cash from the government. Folks who are paying attention, what is this? Money printing, deficit spending, inflation. This is the early warning sign that inflation is going to skyrocket. Just like we were talking about with interest rates aren't going down. Trump spent most of the first year of his administration complaining about Powell not lowering interest rates. Have you noticed how Trump has stopped talking about that? And there's a good reason. Because this war that he's walked the United States into that they cannot get out of, they're trying to dictate terms to the Iranians when they are in no position to dictate terms. The Iranians are not defeated. They have not been beaten. No amount of bombs from the air is going to break them. And they have a list of their own conditions. And that's the negotiating platform, whether the United States wants it or not. If the U.S. stopped fighting today, I don't think the Iranians do. There was only one way to avoid this disaster, and that was to stay out of it. We thought Trump was smart enough to understand that. He certainly looked like he was for a while. Iran-U.S. war. Full list of countries that are enforcing stringent curbs to tackle energy crisis. Europe, Africa, Asia. You got Pakistan, Bangladesh, China. Like, we're talking about energy. Like, people are worried about smart cities, man. This war could be the trigger that keeps you within a certain area, a certain radius of your house, that you only have a certain fuel budget to get back and forth to work or to get the necessities that you need, if you have them at all. Certain countries in the world will experience electricity rationing. Probably not where I live. That's why I live here. But I still have to have empathy and concern for all the people who are going to suffer, and they don't even live anywhere near Iran. They're not in Iran. They're not in the Middle East. They're in other disparate places on the planet. And that's why this is a global conflict already. The 48-hour war that is in its, what, 28th, 29th day? I think today's day 29? It's time for people to start updating their worldview. Speaking of updated worldviews, it appears that at least some of the participants at the CPAC conference have updated their worldview. I thought Trump canceled his appearance at CPAC. First time a conservative leader's not been there in 10 years. Kind of crazy, if you ask me. But maybe he knew. I thought it was to focus. I thought he was canceling it so that he could focus more on the what I think is going to happen now. So there's this 2-week reprieve. I should have just said this earlier. 2-week reprieve on strikes on energy facilities. I think the United States is going to go for a knockout blow. They're going to use their limited ground forces to try and accomplish something. I don't know what they're planning to try and accomplish. They're going to bomb heavy. They've re-kitted out their inventories from around the world. Remember, they were pulling ammunition in from all over the world, so they've got all their fancy weapons. They're going to deploy all those. And the idea is they're going to knock the Iranian government so hard that they're going to be on their knees. It's not going to work. I'm going to tell you that. It's not going to work right now. But you have to listen to CPAC's response.
How many of you would like to see impeachment hearings? No. That was the wrong answer.
That's an example of laughing at an inappropriate time. We're talking about a global disaster here. I don't even know how I can laugh at it. I think Trump didn't appear at CPAC because he knew there would be a huge contingent in the crowd that would probably boo his very presence. So it was smart of him for political reasons to avoid that. By the way, you know, let's just do this here for a second. I'm going to mute the sound and we're just going to watch. This is Chinese tech. This is where warfare is going. This is where warfare is going in Ukraine. We're not dealing with great big aircraft carriers with very expensive planes anymore. It's, you know how the Americans, they like to focus on the number of targets hit and how many bombing runs they've done, and they focus on the good numbers that are good metrics. They can also focus on how much money the United States spends on its military, as if a lot of that number isn't just wasted. It's like greasing palms with $50,000 washers and nuts. The number hides the story. Militarization is becoming, what do you call it, accessible to people with less money again. It's a great leveling. This happens periodically throughout history. So when guns became cheaply made and accessible, there was a leveling out of power. If people had guns, then governments had to respect them more. And then there was a consolidation and a concentration over the Cold War with bigger and bigger weapons. And now we're getting back down to small, cheap drones, autonomous. The Chinese are at the forefront of this. And I got to tell you, the American military is very far behind with the way that they fight wars. And they're finding out now, up against the Persian Shield. Why is it always Persia? Why is it always the Zagros Mountains that break empires? It's beyond me. And meanwhile, again, I shouldn't be laughing. Global food supply faces a dangerous bottleneck as Iran war persists. I know it's the New York Times. I'm not supposed to listen to the New York Times, but it doesn't matter if I'm supposed to listen or not. They're accurate. They're talking about something that's, let's face it, folks, it's almost April. I know farming. I know that if crops don't get in the ground at the right time, you miss. You can't undo it. You're bound to the sun. You're bound to the seasons and the cycles of the rain. Things don't happen on a schedule. We got a little bit of wiggle room. But it's a matter of weeks, maybe a couple weeks. It's not a matter of months. You cannot replace a growing season in a world with just-in-time delivery dependent on food stocks that are ever diminishing, like the buffer that we have to take food surplus from one part of the world and plug a hole in another part of the world was already threatened by the Ukrainian war. A lot of the surplus that gets produced in Ukraine ends up in Africa. They're already experiencing the shock of losing at least some of those crops. They haven't lost them all yet. What happens when this starts happening to other areas of the world? When countries freeze exports of foodstuffs and cereals because they need it for themselves, what happens to the people on the margins? Do we care about the margins? Apparently we care about this is funny, Market Watch. Dow falls 700 points. S&P 500 heads for lowest close since August as NASDAQ falls further into a correction. I'm not calling this a correction. The longer this war goes on, this thing we're calling a correction is going to be a steep market decline, not a correction. And there are so many facets to this conflict. Iraq to summon U.S. charge d'affaires after deadly strike on military base. Prime Minister's office says Baghdad will file UN complaint, reserves right to respond. So we think of the war in Iran as Iranian in that the battle is only brought to the Middle East by the Iranians hitting U.S. assets, which is what they're doing, hitting U.S. assets in the countries that they've been hosted in, because the Iranian war aim at this point in their defensive war their existential war is to kick the United States out of the region completely. They've already managed to get American troops out of every single base and do an immense amount of damage to the radar installations and the base's infrastructure. They're completely unlivable as they work remotely from hotels, which the Iranians are also working at striking. How many people have been killed already? How many casualties there actually are? We don't know because we're being gaslit every single day. But this war is not just restricted to Iran. We know there's militias trying to hit U.S. infrastructure and U.S. bases and U.S. troops in Iraq. But the fact of the matter is the Iraqi government, after trillions of dollars, as Trump once rightly highlighted, trillions of dollars and massive amounts of lives lost, the Iraqi government isn't exactly friendly to the United States. And in the current regime where they're trying to walk a tightrope between areas of the country that they cannot control or they very loosely control and trying to maintain civil order and trying not to anger the world superpower, but they've given, I would say they've almost given up because now the Iraqi government has signaled to the militias that are fighting U.S. troops that they are under no restraints from the Iraqi government. Because so long as American bombs are falling on Iraqi territory, the Iraqi government has said they have a right to self-defense. It's two countries now. It's Iraq and Iran. Used to be mortal enemies, a concoction and a creation of U.S. foreign policy. The Iran-Iraq War, people should go and search Iran-Iraq War documentary. Look at where they were in the 1980s. Look at where they are now. Friends, together. Sunni and Shia pushed together by the superpower who was dumb enough to hail and to adhere to answer Israeli calls to go to war with Iran. Just so you understand where we're at heading into the weekend, U.S. signals to allies no ground invasion coming with thousands of troops still en route. Iran denies requesting Donald Trump's 10-day halt. Israel attacks steel and industrial sites, which I don't believe it's listed here. The heavy water research reactor, part of the Iraq nuclear complex, was targeted. The yellow cake factory in Yazd province was hit. The Iranians have now warned industrial producers to evacuate their workers because they intend to strike back. Everything Israel does, Iran answers. So, and that's another aspect of this. I've said the Iranians don't want to let the United States off the hook. Neither do the Israelis. That's why they leaked the 15-point plan. They're working to undermine the United States while they demand the blood of U.S. troops. Because as the Israeli chief of staff told a security meeting yesterday, he said, we're going to run out of men. We need a conscription law. We need a reserve law. We got to force people in Israel into military service because we're not going to be able to conduct basic operations because we're stretched too thin. Which means they need American blood to conduct this war. Escalation on all fronts. IRGC HQ targeted by U.S. Israel. Iran signals expansion by naming UAE targets, hitting Kuwait ports, and sending drones on Riyadh. Iran newly warning it will hit Gulf industry. Rubio tells the G7 foreign ministers war will continue for another 2 to 4 weeks. 2 weeks to flatten the curve. 2 weeks to flatten the curve. Whenever a government says 2 to 4 weeks, remember they said 2 to 4 days. After they said 24 to 48 hours, we're going to hit the Ayatollah. The regime's going to collapse. People are going to come out on the streets. They're going to rally. I seen Aragachi, or is that his name? The foreign minister of Iran, anyway. He went on state TV. And he's surrounded by pictures of all the different rallies happening in all the different cities in support of the government. Turns out they're a very proud people, these Iranians. If only somebody knew. If only somebody predicted that there would be a rallying to the flag. As they were being murdered in a war of aggression for the second time. Israel doubles down amid reports of manpower strain. IDF chief warns of manpower pressure, even as Defense Minister Katz vows to intensify and expand strikes. There's a discontinuity there. There's a disparity there. Nothing is going according to plan for, quote unquote, our side. Risk rises that Iran is holding back more advanced missiles for a prolonged war. WSJ writes, the U.S. and Israel are pounding Iran's missile launching sites, but Tehran's missiles keeps flying, which means the bombings aren't working. The Iranians have found and deployed a successful countermeasure to everything that the U.S. and the Israelis can throw at them. And their response is measured. They're firing a consistent amount every single day, which I think means they're holding back a considerable inventory for doing big things, because the Iranians have demonstrated that they're willing to climb the escalation ladder, but they don't take the first step to the next rung. They wait for their adversaries to do so. So every time it happens, they demonstrate their power. And you may say, well, their power is limited. They can't invade the Middle East. Well, it's kind of funny. With a million men under arms, they probably could do something in Iraq if they really wanted to. And they might have the support of a large portion of Iraqi society, but that's not on the table right now. I'm going to finish with U.S. signals to allies, no ground invasion coming, with thousands of troops still en route. Why would we believe them? What reason do we have to believe them? Throughout history, when the United States concentrates forces, they deploy them. They have intent. It's always that way. When they moved all those ships and all those resources into the Caribbean, they weren't just saber-rattling with Venezuela. They were intent, and they took Maduro out. When they sent and they concentrated all of their ships in the Persian Gulf, they used them in the 12-day war to defend Israel and to bomb Fordo. And when they moved and deployed their troops and their planes, consistent with an operation on Iran, they went ahead and they did an operation on Iran. Now they're moving ground troops. And with Trump gaslighting for 2 weeks now, saying peace was on the way, that the Iranians are begging for it, even though they're clearly not, the markets were treating Trump's word as gold. And now they're not. They're not listening anymore because they figured out the administration is absolutely full of shit. Pardon my French. But we have to call it what it is. To do anything else would be completely dishonest. And that's not what we're here to do on this channel. I'm Frank Vaughn. I'll see you in the next one.